following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official inside look at Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. Starting to get a little bit busier inside Eagle Nation, or at least on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. I think over the weekend, we're going to have four games in the span of 3 days.
You know, we usually get an overlap at some point. Sometimes it lasts a couple of weeks. I think this one is going to be the big one when you've got football combined with both men's and women's basketball, and then the possibility of a bowl game could throw some wrinkles in. But this is the one that if we can get over that hurdle, then we can kind of start singing Christmas songs even more.
Hey, we might sing Christmas songs on the way up to Davidson. You never know.
I mean, I've heard Burl Ives and Andy Williams about 10 times already in the last couple of days, so you know it's going to turn a lot of green and red or wherever you go.
As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic systems, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Not a whole lot going around Eagle Nation, but you've got the main sports going on.
In more ways than one, thankfully.
Yeah, no kidding. But Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball in the main swing of it, Georgia Southern men's basketball picked up a unexpected game that came out late last week, and then on Saturday went up to USC Upstate in a pretty exciting one nonetheless.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting what happened. Granted, I don't really know what I was expecting because Upstate had lost to a non-Division I team. They were 0-3. They had lost earlier in the week to Eastern Kentucky, and we still really don't know what this Eagle team has with two non-Division I victories. But going on the road was going to be a natural hurdle because traveling for them for the first time in the COVID era. How would they handle things? And, of course, we couldn't be there because we were with Georgia Southern football, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Started off pretty well on the defensive end, had a little bit of a lapse early in the second half and got down by 9 points. But Brian Berg has had a knack, and I know he's only 3 games into his coaching career, as a head coach at least, but whenever he's called a timeout, he has found a way to get a point across because when they come out of timeouts, these guys roar on offense and defense. They got down 9. I think it was a 16-1 Upstate run. Right after that timeout, it was a 10-1 Georgia Southern run. In the next 2 minutes, they tie the game.
So you're telling me Brian Berg has taken a page out of B.J. Green's conference on the mound playbook?
Yeah, each of them lasts about 30 to 60 seconds. Thankfully, basketball forces the game to get going after that. BJ could stand out there as long as he wants to until the umpire breaks it up.
Yeah, depending on who you get, it could be 3 days. It could be 2 minutes.
Even late in the game, it was, I think, a minute 22 left. Georgia Southern was down by 6. And when you're on the road and you're down by 6, that's very difficult. But then Caden Archie took over. He had a phenomenal game, probably the best game of his college career now that he's at his third stop. But the Eagles end the game on a 10-1 run. He scores 8 of those points, including a coast-to-coast and one with 1/10 of a second left. And then he made the free throw, which the Eagles did not do again against Upstate. But they came out on top with a 72-69 win. Stat-wise, because you know we love numbers, Georgia Southern had 9 and 1s in the game. I've never heard of that before. And Archie had 7 by himself.
That'll do.
So the fact that he could get to the rim and then score and not have to earn them at the free throw line, he tried to add them, of course, at the end. But the fact that he showed strength around the rim to get to 23 points, setting a new collegiate career high, was a big deal. And even though the Eagles defended well in spurts, they did allow USC Upstate to shoot close to 70% from three-point territory. Still, despite all of that, Brian Berg is 3-0 and he's the first Georgia Southern first-year head coach to start 3-0 since 1967. So historic to get that victory. Yeah, you got to go to Davidson, but that's a great way to start.
We've talked about it last week about how it's not necessarily one person carrying this team, and we've talked about what Archie did against Upstate with 23 points and 5 rebounds, but you're seeing it spread around again. You've got Eric Boone with 13 points, Elijah McCadden with 12 points, 9 for Kamari Brown. And it just seems like this is a team, Coach Berg's talked about it ever since he got to Statesboro, of not being a selfish basketball team, being very unselfish and being team-oriented. And it really seems like these guys have bought into it.
This isn't going to be a situation where there's a Tukey Brown scoring 18 a game or an Ike Smith scoring 15 a game or a Quan Jackson scoring 15 a game. You're going to have a bunch of guys somewhere between 8 and 13 points, and it's probably going to be just about everybody that sees the floor. Grant Weatherford made his debut against Upstate. He was out the first two games of the season. Georgia Southern is still waiting to get Zach Bryant eligible. Their outstanding point guard from UAB, who is a two-time All-Conference USA selection. The hope is that he is going to be ready for Friday to take on Davidson because the Eagles are going to need him. That is a tough place to play, and Davidson is a really good team, despite a record that may not tell you that. But I think that for this offensive team, when they run these motion sets that are based on screening everywhere, not just the basketball, where we saw the Coach Byington offenses thrive over a seven-year stretch, everybody's going to have to be involved in it. It's not just the five that are playing at any given time. We've seen the substitution patterns pick up. Sometimes it's two in, sometimes it's three in. But whoever's on the floor, they have to execute what is being asked of them. And they've been really good on the offensive glass so far as well.
Talk about the substitution patterns. We'll get into Georgia Southern women's basketball against Furman in a little bit. There was a point where six players tried to check in at one time.
Have I ever told you my sixth dance story?
No, but I feel like it's a good one. Okay. Well, you probably have over 5 years. I think I've heard close to all of them.
I may have told it on a podcast, but I'll tell it again. I was playing JV in high school. I think this was my sophomore year. And I just checked in. We were on defense. And I realized that I wasn't guarding anybody. I mean, we were waiting for somebody to take a shot. I wasn't guarding anybody. And I realized, wait a minute, I was the sixth guy on the floor. And it wasn't my fault because I was told to check in. And I thought I told whoever it was that they needed to come out, but by the time I realized it, coach looks at me, yells at me, tells me to get off the floor, even though he sent me in, so we got a technical foul. They made two free throws. We ended up getting blown out anyway. This was early in the third quarter. It was already a 15-point game. I'm thinking, dude, you're the one that sent me in. What do you want me to do? So I can relate to having six on the floor.
But again, Georgia Southern men's basketball will now head up to Davidson, North Carolina on Friday to take on the Wildcats, the former SoCon foe. Davidson now in the Atlantic 10, Georgia Southern, of course, in the Sun Belt. But this is a Davidson team that comes in 2-2, and you talked about it, not necessarily what you would think of a 2-2 team. The two losses coming to number 19 Texas and Providence.
By a combined 3 points.
Correct. Yeah. And so this is a Wildcats team, and Georgia Southern, no stranger to what Davidson brings on the basketball floor, no stranger to Bob McKillop, who is now in year 32.
Yeah, it's the fact that he has lived across the street from Belk Arena for 32 years is probably a more impressive accomplishment that he's been at Davidson for 32 years. He is that community, and that community is him.
And, of course, there's not players that have seen Georgia Southern, but these two teams know each other pretty well. But somebody that Georgia Southern is going to be getting to know over the next day or so, and I'm sure already have, is Kellen Grady.
Yeah,
this is
great.
A guy that's pretty phenomenal. 18 points on the year so far. He's been in second team all A-10 last year, first team the year prior. He was the rookie of the year in the A-10 his freshman year. This is a guy that knows how to play the game of basketball.
He scores everywhere. He can drive. He can knock down jump shots. He can step back and knock down the three. He's going to be one of the best players that Georgia Southern sees all year. And look, I know they had opportunities to play Power Fives like Georgetown and NC State. They had an opportunity to go to Butler, but all of those were wiped away because of COVID travel concerns. But getting this one on the schedule, this would be a meaningful game to win. Georgia Southern is not going to be favored to win this game because of the star power that Davidson has back. They have been very good in the Atlantic 10 since making the move. I think they already have a regular season championship and a tournament championship going to the NCAA March Madness a couple of years ago. But for Grady, you always have to account for him, and he is also a very good defender. They didn't lose very much from that team last year, and it's an offense that a lot of people have tried to replicate. In fact, Coach Byington, when he was at College of Charleston, he would say that he studied the Davidson offense to figure out how they got such good looks and how they took such good shots. And the reason why they're one of the most efficient offenses in the country year in and year out is because they don't do things wrong. They don't turn it over a whole lot. They screen. They cut. They take the best shot available. Sometimes it's early in the shot clock. Sometimes it's late in the shot clock. And they've always got at least one big guy that can step out and shoot. This year, it's Brajkovic, one of their youngsters. He's 6'11", but he can knock down a three, which makes him even more difficult of a matchup. Now, defensively, they do struggle to guard the basketball, and that's something that Coach McKillop has dealt with ever since they made the move to the Atlantic 10. It's a better basketball league than what the Southern Conference was. But at the same time, they're so good with their help defense, and they're so good getting their hands involved whenever other teams try to penetrate. That's where they can generate their steals. You know they're going to come at you with that three-quarter court trap that he has used for 32 seasons. And when the lights are on you at Belk Arena, I've said this before, I think they're the brightest lights in any gym I've ever been in. That includes Cameron Indoor Stadium, where we were back in 2015. When those lights are on, they are brighter than just about anything that you've seen, and it can be a little bit unsettling, especially if you're going there for the first time.
Well, we were above the lights at Cameron Indoor. I think we were almost above the roof at Cameron Indoor.
We were close. We were close.
But this is a Davidson team, and we've seen it, again, back in SoCon days, that when you play a Davidson team, you know you're going to get a fundamentally sound team and one of the more disciplined teams that you're going to play in your schedule.
And Georgia Southern has not fared very well historically at Belk Arena, going back over the year by years, just to get a bit of an idea before Friday's matchup. It was routine that Georgia Southern was getting dominated by 20 or 30 points. They haven't won a game at Belk Arena in 20 years. Look, they haven't played there in 6 years because the teams went their separate ways. That was part of when the SoCon lost five teams at one time, and then they had to reload. But yeah, Georgia Southern hasn't won up there since February of 2000.
It'll be a 7 o'clock tip-off on Friday at Davidson up in Belk Arena. Danny and I will have the call for you on that one. Then we'll make our way back for Georgia Southern women's basketball against Coastal Georgia on Saturday. We'll dive into that one in a little bit. And then Saturday evening, it's Georgia Southern and Appalachian State. Then turn right around on Sunday, and Georgia Southern men's basketball has the Mercer Bears inside Hanner Field House on Sunday, 6 o'clock, the tip-off against Mercer.
That's the saving grace of that game, that it is a 6 o'clock tip so we can get a couple of hours sleep.
And then
we
that can, it's at Hanner.
Then we could slug some energy drinks and play at Hanner and see how we match up against the Bears. They're coming into the week undefeated. They've already defeated Georgia State and Georgia Tech. They did have a rather close game at home against Southern Wesleyan a few days ago, but they're 5-0. Greg Gary has done a really good job. He was a former assistant for Matt Painter at Purdue. That's a tough game despite it being at home.
The college basketball world boggles my mind this year, especially in the state of Georgia. We talked about Georgia Tech's struggles earlier on last week, about how they had lost to Georgia State in a couple overtimes. They lost to Mercer at home. And then what does Georgia Tech do?
Beat Kentucky.
Yeah, they go up and beat Kentucky.
And it was by a lot,
yeah,
too.
What are we doing here?
That was not a good situation for Kentucky, and I think they're off to their worst start in maybe ever. But they're young, and how you deal with COVID is going to be a huge part of your year. And when you have a young team, which Kentucky is going to have to deal with most of the time, losing all of that star power to the NBA, mostly one-and-dones that Coach Cal has to deal with, and you can get picked off by veteran mid-major teams. Now we'll say mid-major now instead of group of five because that's more of a football thing. But if you've got a senior-laden mid-major team, I think it's going to be more often than not that those teams are going to be able to beat high-level teams this season.
All I know is that I would not want to be the person to ask the first question at the press conference for John Calipari after they got beat by Georgia Tech.
He's probably just looking around. Well, through the Zoom, he's looking at all those boxes saying, all right, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be?
Kind of like in Waterboy when they're trying the onside. Okay, which one?
He probably didn't say what Derek said after that, though.
No, probably not. I hope not.
Maybe he said it to himself, but that's pretty funny.
He can say it once. Again, Friday at Davidson, 7 o'clock the tip-off for Georgia Southern men's basketball, 6 o'clock the tip-off on Sunday against Mercer. Georgia Southern women's basketball opened up the home slate against the Furman Paladins this past Thursday, fell 73-58 in that game. It was a game that was a one-possession game pretty much the entirety of it until the fourth quarter, and then Furman outscores Georgia Southern 26-12, thanks in part to Tate Walters, the freshman for Furman, playing in just her second career game. She went in their first career game against Clemson, she went 1 of 13 from the floor, 0 of 9 from three-point land, then comes into Georgia Southern, goes 9 of 17, 4 of 9 from three-point, ends up with 25 points, obviously a career high. But that was the big part for Georgia Southern. They knew they were going to have to take away Selena Taborn and Tierra Hodges down low, and they finished. Hodges finishes with 12. A lot of that came late, but then held Selena Taborn to just 4 points and didn't get her first touch of the ball game until the second quarter. And so did well down low, but let Tate Walters have a career game against Georgia Southern. Again, 25 points. For the Eagles, had one Eagle in double figure in Atiana Galden, had 10 points and 4 rebounds. And it was just something that the fourth quarter was not Georgia Southern's friend, again getting outscored 26-12 as they look to bounce back after a little over a week off. It'll be a noon tip-off on Saturday, so a double dip on Saturday.
You're a busy beaver.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Whenever you do that, I think of Minnesota and the gopher on the scoreboard.
Yeah, except my eyes don't look like that.
Yeah. If it did, we'd have more conversations. But a new tip-off against Coastal Georgia coming in out of the NAIA out of Brunswick. That'll be Saturday. Noon tip-off will be on the air at 11:30. And then get things going for Appalachian State. 6 o'clock the kickoff, 4 o'clock the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. But before we get to that, got to recap this past weekend. It's Georgia Southern football against the FAU Owls. And this was one I don't know that anybody knew exactly what to expect from this game for Georgia Southern and FAU. You knew FAU came in with one of the better defenses in the country. Obviously, they only played 6 games, but allowing only 6 touchdowns entering the game. But this is one that really and truly from the beginning, Georgia Southern controlled.
I didn't know what it was going to look like with Duck Roos calling plays, with Shy Wirtz being out, with Kendrick Duncan being out, with Zion McGee being out again, and the injuries, the inactives, the opt-outs, they were just adding up. But I remember telling Terry right before kickoff, look, if there's one thing that Georgia Southern has done, and it might be the only thing that people want to admit that Georgia Southern has done this year, they protected Paulson. 5-0, it's now 6-0. They've now won 10 straight games here, and that made it 27 straight against non-conference opponents. There had to be a concern against FAU because of the defense. Offensively, they have a lot of weapons, but they've been struggling to generate the kind of numbers they did a year ago when they won Conference USA. They won 11 games. They won their own bowl. They played at their home stadium for their bowl game. That must be nice. Did the Boca Raton Bowl. Different team, though. Different coaching staff with Willie Taggart coming back to Statesboro. He was on the Western Kentucky staff when they beat the Eagles in the playoffs back in 2002. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think Georgia Southern was in control for most of the game. But numbers-wise, it wasn't a whole lot different from what we've seen. The rushing was 269, about on par with what the Eagles have done this year, being top 5 in the country. Still had their red zone difficulties. They were 3 out of 4, but just the one touchdown by Logan Wright to make it 17-3. There was a turnover on downs. There was a blocked field goal. Gave up a couple big passing plays. So there was a lot that didn't really seem different. But the 5 of us were in the booth when the game was over, and we just looked around, and it just felt better.
Yeah.
And it was hard to describe why. It just felt better. It felt like a Georgia Southern game. That was maybe the most fun game that the Eagles have had this season. It's been so many that have been down to the wire, you're more or less just wiping your brow instead of being able to celebrate because it's been close. Sometimes it's been good. Other times it's been a heartbreaking loss. But for the offense, which was under the microscope even more last week, I don't think it was a whole lot different. Maybe a motion here and there, maybe a different play call here and there, a different scheme slightly, but it was execution. They just executed. And it felt better because at times it looked better, and a lot of that goes to Justin Tomlin being calm, being confident. Yeah, he put the ball on the ground 3 times. Eagles didn't lose anything, and there was a play on the sidelines that could have been a pick, but Ahmad Ross couldn't pull it in for FAU. But there was execution. That's really what it came down to.
We'll talk about JT in a little bit, but there was a play that leading up to that, you had the feeling that Georgia Southern was in control, but it was almost a little hesitancy because you've seen Georgia Southern have control of a ball game, and then in the second half, it swings the other way.
Yes.
But there was a play for me in the first half, and I believe it was Logan Wright taking it up the middle. Looked like he had gotten stopped, but the pile just kept moving, and you saw all 11 players for Georgia Southern pushing the pile and must have pushed it at least 5 yards, if not 10 extra yards from where he would have been.
It was in the first quarter.
And from that on, and I hate to say it was the selling point because it's not like I've got to be sold on Georgia Southern, obviously, but that was kind of the selling point of, okay, this is really happening for Georgia Southern.
I'll call yours and raise you with one more in the third quarter.
Okay.
It was a 3rd-and-14 play where it felt like the Eagles were just going to try to line up, get a little bit, and give Anthony Beck some more field to work with for a punt. But they ran QB lead. I remember saying it as Matt LaRoche had come in motion into the backfield. That was one of the wrinkles. Not really a motion, but just a repositioning of guys. Tomlin faked it to him and then followed him through the right side. The hole was there. And then after the pile was created, you had a massive blue and white just get behind and move it forward 10 more yards. So what could have been a first down run of 15 yards became 27 yards. That, to me, was the moment of the game outside of a scoring play, because Georgia Southern could have just as easily made a bad decision, had a short gain, brought on Beck, given momentum back. But instead, they kept the football. They all worked together. There was more juice. They were rejuvenated. And they were able to consume clock as well, because time of possession back to where it should have been, nearly 37 minutes of game action. That was one of my favorite plays all year, because I think it was a play that showed this offense what they were capable of, and they did it when they had to do it.
And the biggest thing that jumps out to me about this offense is it would have been really easy for these guys just to kind of fold up shop with a new offensive coordinator. You've got a new quarterback running it for the game on Saturday. It came out earlier that Shy Words, everybody knew he was kind of in question after getting banged up against Georgia State, and really has been banged up all season long. And
yeah.
You could almost say he's been banged up for 4 years.
Yeah.
But after you knew the questions earlier in the week, came out that Shy would not be playing, didn't dress for the game. And so you knew Justin Tomlin was going to be running the offense, which he has done. You saw him get the start against Minnesota in a couple of games last year when Shy was hurt. And so being able to have the faith in Justin Tomlin, who, quote-unquote, is your backup but didn't play like a backup on Saturday, there was so much moving with this offense. Moving with the offense, anyway. But being able to do what they did made it even more impressive that way.
He had seen action this year. I think he had played in 6 games going in, but he only had 34 combined snaps. Now, granted, he was in multiple 2-minute drills at Army, at Georgia State, 4 tries. Nothing was successful, but at least he had built up somewhat of a snap count. But you take 34 snaps to that point, he was in for 71 snaps on Saturday. But it didn't look like it was the first time he was starting in more than a year. It didn't look like that Minnesota game was the last time that he was guiding this offense. He used the pitch play so well, because there were some times where he would draw the defense in, pitch it as late as he possibly could. Now, remember, there were several instances where the ball was on the ground, and Coach mentioned that during postgame. Those are some things that will have to be cleaned up. But for the most part, he was in control. And that's how Tomlin is. He doesn't speak a whole lot. He's not boisterous. He just is who he is. He plays the game. It's that calming hand. He enters the huddle. And I think that deep down, some of those guys were wondering, you know, QB1 eventually is going to move on, as much as he has done for this place, making 45 starts and being near the top in a lot of different categories. I think a lot of people are starting to wonder, okay, what do we have past QB1? A game like that shows that Justin Tomlin is not just capable of filling in, being a placeholder or a stopgap so Shy can just come back, wear the cape, and be the hero against App State next week. He showed that he could be a guy that, if he's needed on Saturday, he can beat the Mountaineers for the 3rd straight time. I'd feel fully confident with 1-7 taking snaps.
Yeah.
Just because of who he is. Now, look, Shy does it his way, and that doesn't mean that one way is right or wrong, because they both can be successful. But with what he showed last week, now, I'd like to see him not go 3-for-12 passing, but the Eagles have only completed 1 pass the last 2 years against App. Semantics, we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. But I would feel a lot better now, having seen it, if it has to happen that way.
Yeah.
I thought he played really well.
No, without a doubt. One other guy that we've got to talk about was named the Sun Belt Conference Special Teams Player of the Week in Caleb Hood after that 49-yard punt return for a touchdown. And that's another one that you really felt like after that, that sideline was pretty fired up.
Think about the situation that led into that. Georgia Southern had just gotten stopped on that fourth down play inside of the FAU 10. That could have been a deflator. But what did the defense do? Force a three and out. Matt Hayball was backed up. Good punter. Really good punter. 45-yard average. He didn't strike it well enough. I think it hopped at about the 42. And once it hit the turf, went into the air, and Caleb could catch it on the run-up, it felt like it was ball game on. I didn't know if he was going to score, but he was at least going to give Georgia Southern good field position. A couple of missed tackles later, Najee Thompson throwing that shadow block at the end where he was just trying to get in the way, kind of like a partition or a room divider. Awesome moment at Paulson. Awesome moment.
Almost looked like a Davidson defender on that screen at the top. You really want to get into it.
Tied it all together. I love it.
But again, it was a 20-3 victory for Georgia Southern over the FAU Owls. A really good non-conference victory for Georgia Southern this past Saturday. But the season finale, or regular season finale, I should say, comes on Saturday against Appalachian State. And this is one we'll get into a little bit later on in this week's edition. But I like this, Appalachian State being the last game of the season and being on a Saturday night.
It's never happened before. It's never been close to happening before.
No.
Look, they played in the playoffs in 2001 here at Paulson, but it's never ended the regular season. It hasn't been on a Saturday in 7 years. It's not for a conference championship. It's not for a shot at a conference championship. It's not on national television. It's for a rivalry. And maybe that'll give it another layer that maybe make this one of the best we've ever seen. And I know we'll talk about it in greater detail, but I'm amped up for that, and for a lot of different reasons, that being maybe the most important one.
It'll be a 6 o'clock kickoff on Saturday against Appalachian State. We'll dive into the Mountaineers in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we pause for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
All right, Roger, this is one that people have tried to get out of you for a number of years. Take you back to 1988 and the road to Pocatello. You got to tell us the story. Come on.
The managers that year, don't want to name because it could publicly incriminate all of us, but they put together a videotape that he called The Road to Pocatello. And thank goodness it's not a public tape. One of the copies was buried with Wiley Brandon when he left us. That's one copy we don't ever need to dig up. But there's supposed to be one more copy in existence, and I don't want a copy because I might remember some great times that we had back then. We flew out that year on a Continental DC-9. Furman, who thought they was better than everybody else, they flew out on a Delta L-1011. We both flew into the little military airport there in Pocatello. L-1011, it had no trouble getting over there because it had three big old engines. That DC-9 we had to leave with less fuel. We had to put all the linemen in the back of the plane, so when the pilot started driving, the tail would sit down and the front would come up quick enough. And we weren't in the air long enough till we landed in Denver at Stapleton and refueled so we could come home safely. But we couldn't leave. The plane was so damn little. But that was a part of the budget cuts we had back in those days. And it's even worse when you come home with your tails really tucked after getting beat by Furman. I guess you can't win them all, but we sure try like crazy.
Somewhere there is that tape of The Road to Pocatello that still exists somewhere. Whether it may be buried under the pond house or some other national landmark.
What if I told you The Road to Pocatello wasn't really a road at all?
Either that or they need to make a Road to Pocatello 2 and have Terry do the intro voiceover.
He does have a lot better voiceover voice than I do.
Well, I think it's just inflection and...
Well, the video that he did for Gatta Lifestyle on Senior Day a couple weeks back, that's one of the best they've ever done.
Yeah,
that
when
was
Terry
really
turns on the dramatics, you know, it's all hands on deck.
You wear the blowing wide, and you do so knowing that Irk Russell allowed the opportunity for Eagle Nation to soar once more.
You know, there's going to be...
I should have just done that. I don't know why I did my own voice.
Yeah, there's going to be some point whether it's in the summer, whenever,
Terry, I love you.
Whenever there's not a whole lot to do, we're going to get a edition of Inside Eagle Nation of you just doing all the voices you can do. We're going to take requests and of what people want you to do and whose voice. I know Whitney Hayworth is going to ask for a Barry McKnight.
The summer of 21. We're already getting plans for it.
Hey, you know what happens when you plan. You don't need to.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, it could. Speaking of Terry, by the way, want to give a huge shout out to him for the EFA Letterman's Lounge that he did this past weekend. Had the recipients of the Doc Tom Smith and Roger Inman Awards that they give out each year, and had Antonius Barnes, or AB, works with the equipment staff. He won the Roger Inman Award. He had Sierra Hobday win the Doc Tom Smith Award. And so being able to recognize those two and surprise them on stage was a pretty cool Letterman's Lounge that he did this weekend.
We've had a really good stretch of Letterman's Lounges this year. And look, I know that those are oftentimes geared towards former players. And I think back to the one at Army where Brett Moore joined us. And, geez, what a job he did talking about his experiences with Coach Monken, not just as a player here, but working for him and recruiting up at West Point, and now he's in the Army. And to switch gears last week and talk to not just everyday students, but students who have decided to come here, and to watch them hear that they were awarded scholarships with names on them that have meant so much to this place, that gets you. And you could look, I know that the Facebook Live didn't show this, but there was a nice crowd gathered around the fence barrier near the stage. It almost felt like we were having our own concert.
Yeah, but that was the biggest crowd we've had since Paula Deen was on the stage.
And there weren't even any riblets flying.
Yeah.
There were no Hollis and no nothing like that, but that was a really special thing, and I'm glad we did that.
This weekend, it's Georgia Southern and Appalachian State. A full week for Hate Week this year.
What's the deal?
I know.
We're not in a rush.
I feel like we're a couple days behind.
We're not on a plane copying stuff over. How many hours do we have until this thing gets going? I could get on board with this.
It's an Appalachian State team that comes in 7-3, 5-2 in Sunbelt Conference play after falling to the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana in a crazy way on Friday this past weekend. But this is one that it's the same names from what feels like the last 17 years. Still got Zach Thomas at quarterback entering, I think, his 32nd year at the program.
35th.
Yeah, he's been there longer than Bob McKillop. But Zach Thomas still leading this offense for Appalachian State. And while App State hasn't necessarily been the dominant Mountaineer team that you've seen in years past, still a very good offense.
Yeah, they're still very, very good. And it's two things. One, they never seem like they're young. It always seems like they're junior and senior laden. They do such a good job playing a lot of different guys. And then by the time they lose starters, the backups are practically starters anyway. So it's not as if they're getting up to speed. It's, I just get to play more. I get to begin the game playing my position. Even though the last few years, sometimes they've lost their whole D-line or their linebackers or their secondary. It's just, let's plug someone else in. They've gotten their system, and they've been able to put it in place despite coaching changes. They're on their third head coach now in the last 3 years. Third offensive coordinator, third defensive coordinator. Granted, Dale Jones is back after he was there for 23 years under mostly Jerry Moore and Scott Satterfield, but he went with Satterfield to Louisville. Now he's back, and he's coordinating that defense. But head coach Sean Clark was going to be the guy that got this job. And I think App was sick of doing coaching searches. They just decided to give it to the guy that went there, that played there, that bleeds black and gold, because they think that this is it for him. And it probably is. I can't see him wanting to go a whole lot more because he's coaching at his alma mater, and he was there in the mid-90s when Sean Elliott and Satterfield, they were all teammates. I think they had an undefeated season back in 1995 going into the playoffs. But when something gets to your heart like that and he's been there, this is one where App decided, look, great for Satterfield, great for Eli Drinkwitz. We're not doing this again. We're going to keep the guy who wants to be here.
And it was a guy that had been talked about in both of those searches. whenever you were hiring Eli Drinkwitz, people thought that Sean Clark was going to get it the first time. And then last year he had been on since 2016 as an O-line coach, did a little bit of co-offensive coordinator, assistant head coach, but had been there. And like you mentioned, played at Appalachian State, graduated from there in 1998. And so being able to have somebody that is so invested in the program, it's a lot like people say about Coach Lunsford. Had been here so long as an assistant coach and now taking over as the head coach a couple of years ago. Very similar situations.
Now, even though App does come into this game at 7-3, they bookended with some issues. Remember, they had to remake their schedule. They lost their entire non-conference schedule because of COVID. Added Campbell, added Charlotte, added Marshall, which turned out to be a great game for a former Southern Conference matchup. That's when Marshall had Randy Moss and Jim Don, and they were in their heyday. But when they couldn't run the ball at Marshall, that exposed some things. With a lot of turnover, people were wondering, okay, was App going to go on the backslope? They lost that game up in Huntington 17-7. And then the COVID came. They spent 17 days off the field. No workouts. They went 26 days in between games. But in App fashion, program in place, they were fine. They come back on a Thursday night, destroyed Arkansas State. It was not as close as the final. I think it was 45-17. It was not that close. Ark State had mistakes all night long. App had big plays. It's been an unfortunate season for Arkansas State.
That might be the first game that you can say 45-17 and it wasn't that close.
No, it was no, it was four touchdowns. It wasn't that close. I can remember watching that game and thinking, geez, poor Ark State, because App looked like a team that had lost the last time it was on the field. But the last time they played was that Campbell game. And they hadn't practiced full go until 2 days before that. So they were in a heap. This game was postponed. We're supposed to play a Wednesday night game at Paulson. Yeah. Now it's going to hopefully happen on this coming Saturday. But they were able to get things right. They were 6-1 at one point. But when I say bookended by some difficulties, penalties have picked up. Turnovers have picked up, and that's not something that has been a problem for App State the last 5 years. Look at what happened against Coastal Carolina. Zach Thomas, preseason offensive player of the year, threw three interceptions. Coastal's just having one of those years, and we saw it even more so last week against BYU. Now they're 10-0. That something crazy is going on in Conway, and if Chadwell ends up staying there, they may really have something crazy going on. But this past Friday night, against Louisiana, Cajuns had three punt snaps go over Reese Burns' head.
By a lot.
Lala ran for almost 250, but because of those three snaps, it took away more than 100 yards rushing. So the numbers looked like App did a decent job, but Sean Clark was pretty upfront about this in his Monday teleconference. Look, we gave up 250 yards rushing, but those three bad snaps took 100 yards away from the total. That's NCAA rules, and we saw that with Texas State here a couple weeks ago. Bad snap over Seamus O'Kelly's head. They lost almost 40 yards on that play, and it kept them where Georgia Southern had held five opponents under 100 yards rushing this year. There was a bad snap on a PAT. Cost the Cajuns a chance to tie the game. App led for a good portion of the first half, and then the Cajuns turned it on. They had three touchdowns from Trey Regas. But then App benefited from two safeties, because Billy Napier couldn't decide, okay, do I go for it? Do I take a safety? Because one of the bad snaps resulted in a safety when Burns kicked it out of the back of the end zone. App had it one more time, needing only a field goal to tie it late. They drove down, two shots of the end zone, both incomplete, and then the usually reliable Chandler Staton, who became the Sun Belt's all-time leading scorer earlier that game, he hooked a 30-yard field goal badly.
Yeah, it was so bad. We were up in the press box watching it on Friday night, and it looked like that it was blocked.
Couldn't believe it.
It was so far off, it looked like somebody had tipped it at the line of scrimmage.
And the weather was bad. It had rained. It was windy. Sound familiar?
No, weird. Bad weather in Boone.
Exactly. He had made one from 43 earlier that game, but he had missed one a couple of drives into the game, which could have given App a two-score lead. Remember, they had the first bad snap. They recovered it for a touchdown, but a very curious personal foul moved the football way back, and there was never an explanation as to why that happened. But think about all that App was given. Why'd they lose the game? They were minus three in turnovers. You cannot make mistakes like that against a team in Louisiana who is now 9-1. And look, you know App gets this rivalry like Georgia Southern does. But now mentally, where are they after that game, and where are they from the standpoint of Georgia Southern has had our number? the last 2 years. We've owned this conference. We've won the last four league titles. Nobody else has beaten us multiple times in this league except that Georgia Southern team. So where are they?
You look up and down this team, and we talked about all the familiarity with the names, but the thing that is kind of surprising is we were putting together our notes for the game. There's a lot of guys that you've heard the names that are now backups for Appalachian State, especially you look on that defensive line for App State, and Elijah Dirasuba, he's now a number two, quote-unquote, on the depth chart. You look at George Blackstock, who had a career-high seven tackles against Georgia Southern last year. He is now that backup nose tackle. And so is it that you've just got so much talent at App, or is it just – and obviously, you know, those guys are still going to play.
Yeah.
They like to bring defensive linemen in and out like Georgia Southern does. But now it's the question of who do you go to now if you're App?
With Dirasuba, he originally was not going to play this year. He was going to end his career. He's been battling hip problems for the last couple of seasons. But he decides before the season that, you know, let's give this a go. I think I'm healthy enough. So he's played. But Caleb Sperlin, who was behind him, former walk-on, they've actually got three walk-ons on their two-deep on their defensive line, if that tells you anything. But Sperlin is finally a starter after 3 years as a backup-slash-special teams guy. And they've gotten him involved on offense, too, because he's caught two touchdown passes. Don't think that that hasn't been noticed by Scott Sloan's defense if App happens to get that close on Saturday. But with somebody like Blackstock, he's somebody that could have just as easily been an all-conference guy last year. And maybe they've been able to mix up their rotations that much more. App and Georgia Southern are very similar in that they send defensive linemen in almost on a play-by-play basis. I think that they just want to show how much depth that they have, and maybe they don't look at it as, okay, you're definitely a number two, but maybe as, okay, just get ready. Maybe in a snap or two, you're going to be in the game.
Everybody talks about whether Georgia Southern, Georgia State is a rivalry, and you can debate that until you're blue in the face. But there's no debating whether Georgia Southern Appalachian State is a rivalry from either side. No. I think Appalachian State would say Georgia Southern is without a doubt their rival. Georgia Southern would say without a doubt Appalachian State is their rival. You look at what some of the guys were talking about on the media availability yesterday on Monday, and Drew Wilson, God love that kid.
Amazing.
But he said, basically, if you have an A with that Mountaineers or whatever's in the middle of that A, he's like, I don't like you. You don't like me. And so that's how this is going to go.
Big old snuggly bear. He's as honest as could be.
Oh, my. He was great. He killed it.
Well, you think about the coaches show last year at Eagle Creek whenever we had the whole offensive line on that stage, and I was praying that the stage was going to stay intact with all of them up there. But he had the line of the year when we asked him who ate the most, and he said Lawrence Edwards. And I said, why? And he said, look at it. That brought the entire house down. I thought about what it's going to mean this year. Look, it's back on a Saturday. Hadn't been there since 13. It's at the end of the season, which it's never been. It's not on national television, unfortunate. Well, as of right now, you don't know if it's going to be picked up or not, but assuming that it stays on ESPN3, they're not competing for a conference championship. This is simply for pride. This is for the sake of the rivalry. Georgia Southern goes from a team that's never played in FAU to a team that's played more than anybody else. This is going to be the 36th installment. Look, you know the history. The matchups are legendary from the 1AA FCS days, nine combined championships, matchup after matchup has given us amazing memories. But the fact that this one is just for the game, nothing else on it besides the fact that this could be the last time that those seniors could play at Paulson, because we don't know if Georgia Southern is going to get a chance to play a bowl game. You know, seven wins is nice, but you don't know if they're going to get that opportunity. It's simply for the sake of this being the best rivalry in the Group of Five. That's not an overstatement. This is the best rivalry in the Group of Five.
And you bring up the point of not knowing whether you're going to a bowl game or not. This could very well be the last game that Georgia Southern plays on the year.
Yes.
Because you look at the number of wins, doesn't really mean a whole heck of a lot this year because, one, you have bowls dropping each and every week of saying they're not playing.
Yeah.
And then you also have the questions of are the league tie-ins going to stay where they are with everybody being bowl eligible? I mean, in a crazy world, ULM is still possibly going to a bowl. Now, I don't know that they're sitting by their phones anytime soon, but just for the sheer fact of everybody is eligible.
And it's unfortunate that Matt Viator did get fired a couple of days ago. So if for some reason somebody would call them, that would be one that they may even decline, because they're dealing with a lot more. South Alabama lost Steve Campbell. There's other musings about jobs all across the country. Even though we're in a pandemic, there's going to be teams that are looking to make some changes. But yeah, this is one where if I'm Georgia Southern, I'm App State, this is your bowl game. Don't bank on getting one more to celebrate your season. Make this your bowl game.
And there's so much talk of conference schedules mean a lot more and conference records mean a lot more as far as bowls are concerned. But at the end of the day, this isn't the year that you're quote-unquote bowl eligible. You're going to a bowl. There's a lot up in the air and still a lot to be decided, which sounds weird because you're only a couple of weeks away from the first bowl tie-ins that Georgia Southern has. But at this point, you almost have to go into it thinking this could be the last time you put on a football uniform this year.
Yeah, technically, you could hear something about a bowl as early as this Sunday, the 13th. I think that's when the quote-unquote selection show would be scheduled. I don't know if that's going to hold up. That is as of Tuesday. And then on Monday, on the Sun Belt teleconference, had a chance to hear from Commissioner Keith Gill about how things could get rearranged and how kooky it could end up being. He said at this moment he's confident that the five main tie-ins would still be able to invite Sun Belt teams. Now, there have been 10 bowls that have been canceled, and we know that the Myrtle Beach Bowl was one that's been rumored to, will it stay, will it go? This is supposed to be the first year of that bowl game, and that's one that, at this moment, Georgia Southern would probably be pretty high on that list. If I'm them, I'm treating this like it is the last game. If you get an opportunity to go to a bowl, fine. We'll pack up the bus. We'll bring as many fans as we can. We'll do it up. We'll live at large. But as far as the way the season has gone with nothing being guaranteed, this is it. This may be the last time we see some of these seniors. This may be the last time we see a lot of these guys. Signing day's coming up. The opportunity to opt in for 2021 is going to be hanging. And from what Coach Lunsford told us on Monday afternoon, there are conversations that have started with some of those seniors about will you or will you not come back. And they'll work through those once the offseason begins, and they'll decide if they want to come back and if they'll be afforded the opportunity to do so. This year, more like any other year, there's a lot more balls in the air.
Yeah.
And even at Georgia Southern, which doesn't throw the ball, but there's a lot more balls in the air right now.
It's a crazy time. And obviously we've talked about how it's a crazy year this entire season. But it's one of those you just don't know. But what we do know, Georgia Southern's playing Appalachian State. It's going to be Saturday. I say we know that. Got a pretty good idea of that.
As of right now
on Tuesday. But, again, that could change. Who knows? But it's scheduled for a 6 o'clock kickoff, 4 o'clock the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network.
We've made it to the finish line of the regular season. This is game 12. Did you ever think that a 12th game was going to be played this fall?
I didn't think that a fraction of 12 games was going to be played.
When the cancellations and the postponements started, even before game number one, and then you got through Campbell, okay, that may have been the only one. I mean, it was a little tight there, but at least Georgia Southern got the win. And then you played another one. Then you played another one. You had to go through bye weeks. You had to go through the FAU and the App games being moved. And then now we're in this stretch of not having a week off and since early October. Just think about where we've come from just this year, just in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Now that this is number 12.
This is definitely going to be one that I wouldn't be surprised if there was at least a 30 for 30, if not a couple of documentaries on this year.
You have to. There's just too much that's happened.
No doubt. But again, 6 o'clock to kick off, 4 o'clock the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network for Georgia Southern, Appalachian State. Recapping the other action in Georgia Southern athletics, women's basketball will tip off at noon on Saturday against Coastal Georgia. Men's basketball will be at Davidson, 7 o'clock the tip off on Friday night up at Belk Arena. And then on Sunday, taking on the Mercer Bears, a 6 p.m. tip off inside Hanner Fieldhouse. Again, that one on Sunday, the 13th. Busy weekend for us, busy weekend for Eagle Athletics, but you would want it no other way.
Let's do it.
For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.